What's Jay going to say tonight? Let's ask him. Mr. Mariotti, welcome back to the show on this Wednesday night. How are you, sir? Uh-oh. Hold on, Jay. Hold on. Don't say a word. Jay, hold on. I hit the wrong button. You should be with me now. Can you hear me?
You pushed the right button. Congrats.
Finally,
welcome
I
back.
Did. Yeah, yeah. I get things right every once in a while. How are you, my friend? I missed you last week.
Well, I missed you too, and I know you're a big Mets fan, and I'm sorry about Tom Seaver, the quintessential non-scandalous New York athlete. There aren't many. Derek Jeter was one. Tom Seaver was probably the first. Mr. America married a beauty queen, personified these 69 Miracle Mets, and now he's gone.
Yeah, I've been dealing with Alzheimer's the last couple of years, and you knew this was coming. The Mets, this season, if it had turned out to be a normal season, were going to unveil the first statue in the history of the franchise outside of their ballpark. And they were criticized for not doing this many years earlier when Seaver could have possibly enjoyed the moment. So they'll do it posthumously now. But, yeah, it's a loss that his disposition was not always one that I found favor with, but there was no doubting his abilities as a pitcher. He really was one of those guys who broke pitching, Jay, down to an art form, a science, if you will, tremendous mechanics, great leg drive. The bottom half of his body, the core, allowed him to pitch into his early 40s, won 311 games, won that 300th game back in 1985 at Yankee Stadium against the Yankees. That was on Phil Rizzuto Day. Just a tremendous pitcher, and a guy who, by the way, was never babied, a guy who was in his late 30s and early 40s throwing upwards of 250 innings and more. It really did personify the Mets franchise, particularly in their first 15 years, yes.
You're right, and I'm not one of those writers who cares if he was grumpy. Yes, his disposition around the media was dreadful. I would hate to be a rookie beat writer dealing with Tom Seaver, but so what?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, Steve Carlton back in the day was worse. I mean, I could name you 20 baseball players who were difficult to deal with. So what? Especially on the day he passes, I think we have to accentuate what was so great about Seaver. And I think about, again, that 1969 Miracle Mets team. For Mets fans, once again, another rough season. I thought about you last week during the Brody Van Wagenen fiasco with Rob Manfred.
Yeah.
And now we have Tom Seaver. But that 69 team, one of the true miracle teams, we don't have that many of those anymore. Too much is predictable in sports. Maybe the pandemic might bring about the Miami Heat winning the NBA title or something like that. But in general, sports too predictable. That team came out of nowhere. As I said, he was the superstar of that team and went on to rule that city.
Yep, and the trade that shocked the franchise, shocked the city, and it really shook the franchise to its foundations, June 15th, 1977. And Seaver in the midst of a contract squabble with the Mets. And of course, he was involved. He says what prompted him to go back to the Mets after initially agreeing mid-season that year to a new contract extension was Dick Young, the acerbic, very opinionated, highly toxic in some cases, columnist with the New York Daily News and the New York Post. And he was with the Daily News back then, Jay, and he wrote that Seaver was jealous of Nolan Ryan and so on and so forth. And the contract that Ryan had gotten from the California Angels after the Mets had traded him back after the 71 season. And then when Seaver exploded when he saw that, Grant took ownership's position. Seaver then called the Mets back and said, get me out of here. And on June 15th, 1977, they dispatched him to the Cincinnati Reds for Pat Zachary, Doug Flynn, and Dan Norman. And that's a trade that lives in infamy in the minds of many Mets fans right up to this very second of this very night.
That franchise never could handle prosperity. They never seemed to squeeze the utmost out of each era.
Yeah.
That era, later in the mid-'80s, then recently this past decade when they were assembling such a great young pitching staff, it would be difficult to be a Mets fan, Dino.
It is difficult being a Mets fan, Jack. I think I speak for many Mets fans when I say that. So
Want to explain what happened last week? I know you were in the wilds of Wyoming, but your guy Brody Van Wagenen, who better be sending out resumes as we speak, doesn't realize he's on a MLB.com video, and I really can't tell you why it was running in his office when he's having a private conversation with two colleagues. And pretty much he says Rob Manfred doesn't know what he's doing. That's because at the time they were trying to figure out whether the Mets and the Miami Marlins were going to boycott that night's game. And Van Wagenen says to these two colleagues, Rob Manfred really doesn't know what he's doing. Well, of course he's absolutely right, but it turns out, if you believe Jeff Wilpon, that it was Wilpon's idea to, believe it or not, have the players boycott the game and then come back in an hour and actually play the game,
right,
which is ludicrous. Right. You either boycott or you don't. And then Wilpon fell on his own sword and ripped the hell out of Van Wagenen, and then he misspelled his first name twice in the release. So on top of the Mets being for sale and apparently about to be sold, you're also going to have a new GM in the future, and that's probably a good thing.
Hot mics have become fashionable the last couple of weeks, right? You had Tom Brenneman, now you got Brody Van Wagenen. Who's next? You got to have a third shoe fall here soon.
Oh, there was one the other night, and it just never ends. I mean, wouldn't the first rule of thumb in this industry, whether you're a broadcaster or an executive, is to always watch your ass at all times?
Yeah, especially.
Maybe he was being set up. I mean, I'm wondering, why in the hell is this video cam on, and why didn't he know about it in his own office? That is suspicious in itself. Remember, he came from the agent ranks. That may have worked in the NBA with Bob Myers and some others. That doesn't mean it's going to work in the good old boy network of Major League Baseball. He's clearly in over his head with the media there. And like I said, as you know, they're going to be sold. And apparently it will be Cohen and not A-Rod. I've been wanting to get your thoughts on that, by the way. Would you really want A-Rod running the Mets?
I didn't have an issue with it, no. I thought he would have been an asset, actually, even given his baggage, because I think knowing some of the people that were involved in that group and being able to talk to one of them specifically, Jay, who I know was a part of the group, they had big designs on reinvigorating not only the franchise itself, but they wanted to take part in building a real estate empire around the ballpark, which there currently is not one. I think that A-Rod would have brought a level of accountability to that franchise that has been missing for a long, long time. And I thought he would have been good in terms of being used to lure potential free agents, because there's a lot of players in the game that really like him, and I didn't have any problem with that. Like, Cohen is going to end up owning the team, but no, if it was Cohen, fine, as it looks like it's going to be, but if it was A-Rod's group, that was fine as well, as far as I'm concerned. The thing that people have wondered about is that if they had the money to compete for the team and actually snag the team, would they have resources available to run the team thereafter? I was assured by the individual I spoke with that indeed they did.
Well, apparently what the Florida Panthers owner, NHL, was involved in that group.
Right.
And yeah, there were, and apparently he was going to be the at least the big money guy, and A-Rod was going to be the PR guy. The A-Rod transformation is nothing short of remarkable. It was only 3 years ago when he was dirt in MLB. In fact, Rob Manfred hated him, and he openly fought with Rob Manfred and you know, lied twice about steroids. We know his history. I've never seen anything like it in sports, where he has completely flipped ESPN, Fox Sports. He's a darling. It doesn't matter what he says or does on the air. Whoever his PR guy is, have him call me. My Lord, what a transformation. At this point, I'm pretty sure that Manfred and the old guard of owners would probably love to have him involved, just because he's a youthful infusion.
Right.
He is well known, and I agree with you. There are some reasons to have A-Rod involved. It's just that I think he would be an easy mark in New York. If the Derek Jeter ownership in that group falls through in Miami, I think that would be a natural for A-Rod to buy that team. I don't know if that's going to last or not in Miami, but going back to his hometown might make the most sense for him as an owner.
Hey, you remember in the sequence of Rocky films, the one with Dolph Lundgren, who starred as Ivan Drago, and they talked to Ivan Drago before his fight with Rocky, and he says, if he dies, he dies. And I couldn't help but to think of those words in that movie, Jay, when it was revealed that Kirk Cousins, starting quarterback. Now, I understand he's clarified his comments since the original ones, but Kirk Cousins basically said, hey, I'm willing to go, and we're, what, nine nights away from the NFL kicking off their Thursday night season here. And Kirk Cousins said, if I die of the virus, I die. I'm willing to take the chance and let the chips fall where they may.
An utterly stupid thing to say for a number of reasons, including how he could divide a locker room. Because in that very quote, Dino, and I appeared on a podcast with Kyle Brandt, I believe, I mean, he pretty much said our locker room is divided. There are some guys that don't take it seriously and other guys who think about it 24/7. Then why in the world is the quarterback, the face of the franchise, are you coming out and saying, I don't take this seriously. If I die, I die. And then today in Minnesota, you saw that Sturgis motorcycle thing they had in South Dakota. We had the first person die in Minnesota today that had appeared at that motorcycle rally in South Dakota. So bad timing for Cousins. He tries to clarify. I don't really think you can, because face it, Dino, a lot of people, including young people, believe that. We have an NFL season starting, believe it or not, in 8 nights, a week from tomorrow night. We have yet to hear really any sort of protocol from the NFL on how this is going to come down, because Goodell doesn't want to tell anybody because he's trying to create normalcy among fans. Hey, the season's here. We're going to have 16,000 at Arrowhead and Allen, Chris, and so on. Okay, well, will you tell us how you plan to deal with this? And then you have a star quarterback coming out and saying this. Okay, Kurt, you get COVID. What happens? Is it possible this could be a super spreader in your locker room? I mean, he's not even thinking, and I'm sure he got a call not only from ownership, but probably from the league saying, would you pull back on those comments a little?
What's interesting to me is that here they've made it all these weeks of training camps since they opened training camps, and of course no preseason games this year. Jay, going to jump right into the regular season in 8 nights, like you say. But I would have anticipated up to this point in time that we would have seen many more players being sidelined due to an alleged virus than we've seen. Very, very few. I can't put my thumb on this. Can you?
Well, I'm not sure they're being transparent. And, you know, I saw some of the things the NFL was going to do. They're going to try to distance people at the coin toss, only have one captain per team. Okay, so you're taking it seriously enough that you're going to distance the coin toss, but the minute you have a snap from center, I mean, it's so hypocritical, it's comical. Either you buy into it or you don't. Let's see, Dino, it's way too early. We need to see how this works out. My comparison would be baseball. And we have seen the slog and the struggle. How many teams now, 5, 6, 7, I've lost count, have had at least one test. You've had, 40-some cancellations of games. Before anybody sits here and says, oh, the NFL won't have any problems, let's compare it to what baseball is going through. No bubble in baseball, no bubble in football. Granted, the NFL is now a $17 billion a year enterprise, but they can't buy their way out of this. You have many more players involved on a football team than on a baseball roster. You involve travel. You involve locker rooms. You involve visiting hotels, just like Major League Baseball. So, whoa there on any thinking out there that the NFL is going to do just fine. This is a work in progress. The NBA and the NHL do have bubbles, and they're doing quite well. I don't make anything of that because we've had 68, 70 players opt out. You get more players opting out. Stay tuned on that before we draw any conclusions.
Well, the contradictions, and we've talked about them before, it's mind-numbing, right? I didn't know that they were going to have one guy come out for the coin toss, and of course, they kick the ball off, and everybody just can play the game the way that they used to, and you can't exchange jerseys at the end of the game, but you can tackle and sweat all over each other and block and all that other stuff. It's just the contradictions, as you say, it's hilarious. It's the land of the absurd. Now, you mentioned that, I guess, Kansas City is going to be one of the franchises in the league that they're going to permit a certain amount of fans into Arrowhead Stadium. Other teams, Jerry Jones in Dallas says that they'll have half capacity, which by Texas law at this point, I guess they're allowing them to do that. But the commissioner, the dingbat, Goodell, came out, I think it was yesterday, and said, in his opinion, teams that have fans in the stands will not have any kind of a competitive advantage over teams that don't have fans in the stands. Do you agree with this?
No. 25 teams in the league, Dino, start the season without fans in their home stadiums. We'll have seven that do have fans, evidently. Yes, it creates a competitive imbalance, but that's just Goodell. Read between the lines. It's Goodell saying, shut up, guys. We're paying you. We're going to get ours. Shut up. That's essentially what we're going to get out of the very arrogant NFL. Moving forward, what I want Goodell to address, and he hasn't, is, okay, you have 16,000 people coming into a stadium in 8 nights. How are you going to handle the entryways and the exits? Are they all going to pile out of there at once? It's still 16,000. If they're coming out of a basketball arena, they're all coming out at once. How is that going to work? See what I mean? They aren't complete with their explanations. Oh, we'll do this, but we'll explain how this is going to, in regard to egress in the stadium. So I don't think it's fair. Is he basically telling us the competition doesn't matter? I think they should have made it fair for everybody. Don't have fans everywhere. Make these all big studios. That's what they are anyway. It's just, it's not right. And I think the message there is, we don't really care what happens in the actual games. Let's just get through this health crisis.
And now, Jay, the Big Ten is reversing course. And after coming out a few weeks ago and saying no Big Ten football this year, well, on second thought, maybe we can play a Big Ten college football season this year.
What, did something just come out?
Yeah, they said the other day that the commissioner of the
Big Ten. Oh, you're talking about the other day. Okay,
because
of Trump, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's cut through this. Trump realizes three major swing states in Big Ten country. That's what that's about. And he also realizes, hey, the new Big Ten commissioner happens to be African-American. So why don't I make a phone call to this guy and I'll try to rally those states where the people are angry, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. You know, that's what that's all about. It's a Trump stunt. It's not something to take seriously. I thought you were telling me they were switching course tonight. I don't think you can all of a sudden flip like that. And I don't think the university presidents are going to do that. As much as Jim Harbaugh and Ryan Day and these coaches are lobbying and the athletic directors are lobbying and the parents are upset and they're suing the Big Ten, it doesn't work that way. Once you make a decision like that as a university president, and I believe it was all but three of them voted no, they're not going to flip in 2 weeks when they've already made that decision. So I'm not buying that. And by the way, Trump didn't even mention the Pac-12 because he knows he has no hope in the state of California, so he doesn't even mention the Pac-12. Nothing's going to happen there, Dino. You have your three major conferences all raring to go, and by no coincidence, they're all based in the southern part of the United States.
Yeah, I think there's a political tie-in there. There's no question. Jay, nobody's watching the NBA playoffs. 5-year low in NBA playoff ratings.
Yeah, and it's a shame because the games, I'm watching one right now, they're really good games. But, yes, as we've talked before, I think Trump is partially correct when he talks about the politics of the NBA, and there are certain segments of this country that just do not want any part of it. That's why, Dino, the big story over the next 8 days is, what is Jerry Jones, what is Roger Goodell going to say about players kneeling a week from tomorrow night? We still have no real clarification from the league, and we had Jerry Jones just the other day say, hey, I still want our guys to stand. I'm going to talk to them about a compromise. Dino, nobody is in the mood for a compromise. It's very possible in 8 nights you're going to have an amazing scene where players kneel, and I don't know what the hell is going to happen. Jones may come out and raise holy hell, and then here we go again, and we could have more boycotts in the NFL. That is the story. So far, the NFL has avoided politics, but it's unavoidable. It's unavoidable because Goodell is just tiptoeing around it. These players know that several months ago, he comes out, does the flip-flop, the 180 with the tape, hey, Black Lives Matter. Okay, what has he said about it since? Apparently, they're going to do something in the end zone with a slogan, both end zones, and they've got some other things planned. They're going to allow players to wear decals on their helmets. But in regard to the big story, Colin Kaepernick kneeling on the sideline, why have we heard zilch from the league? Answer, they're afraid as holy hell of what's about to happen in the NFL. That is the story, not COVID nearly as much as what's going to happen starting next week.
Well, we've had many discussions about this, the political elements and the social causes that have come into the sports world. My feeling, of course, and I think you agree with me mostly, to the extreme detriment of these sports, alienating at least half the country in the process, and I think that the ratings reflect that. You know, there's a cause and effect with this whole thing. But one of
you did see though, baseball ratings are up for the first time in ages.
Are they really?
I don't know where that came from.
Where did you see that?
Apparently, women and young people are watching baseball. I don't know. Maybe it's a commentary on real original programming right now on television, or just nothing to do, but baseball ratings are up. There is every indication NFL ratings are going to be good, but that's where I think what I just said applies. You saw the cause and effect during Kaepernick, 2016, 2017, the ratings dropped. If we have players protesting and kneeling, I'm wondering if there will be the same effect, you know, or are NFL fans and gamblers so starved for the product that it won't matter this time and the ratings are going to boom? That's another fascinating sidelight of all this. You're right. The NBA has been hurt by this. Maybe the NFL is just too big to be hurt by sideline protests in 2020.
Well, I'm going to look for that, the baseball ratings on an upshoot of any kind. I've not seen that. I'm going to look for that. But I was on my way to saying to you, Jay, that we've discussed this in the past, and one of the things you said was that not only are the owners fearful, which has compelled them to cave and to go along, to get along with all of this Black Lives Matter stuff, Antifa, social unrest, and all this other stuff, right? But you said, okay, so it's in the immediacy of this time. Okay, and then I said, but what happens when we move into the future? Because when the fox is in the hen house, the fox doesn't leave. So here's my question to you. When the NBA starts again next season, let's say they start hitting the regular season next December or this December here, and it continues and it's nothing different from what we have right now, how will you feel then?
It depends on where the league is at that point, you know, because remember, we might not have an NBA season. It's supposed to start in December. Silver now says no way. It'll start in 2021. We have talked about how the NBA's financial future is dependent on the in-arena experience, the sponsorships, the suites, the expensive season tickets. That's 40% of their revenue. You know, if the players don't get what they want, and they're not going back to a bubble, there's zero chance of that. If the league is in financial chaos, the league does have to cave to the players, because the last thing the league needs is a walkout, a strike. And as you know, force majeure could come into play, and that's basically a lockout. Guys, we're gonna get rid of the CBA, and you are gone. Tell you what, that would be disaster for the NBA, and that's why I think, yes, it's very possible Black Lives Matter is permanent until further notice in the NBA. The NBA has serious issues. The NFL could have this season wiped out completely, and it would be fine. College football has issues if this season is wiped out. Can they recoup in the spring? I don't know if you could play spring football or not. Major League Baseball, as we've talked about, in a complete world of hurt. Football is the one sport, the NFL, the one league that I think could get by this year. So, yeah, all of these leagues are dependent on their relationships with the players. And if the NBA players, who are still liable to boycott any game at any time for any reason right now, I think they have the power now, and I think Adam Silver is helpless to any request they make.
Jay, when you were writing for the so successfully over those years for the Chicago Sun-Times, at the bottom of your column, was there anything that indicated that your views and your commentary didn't necessarily coincide with those of the editorial board of the Chicago Sun-Times?
No, but I think it was pretty apparent.
Yeah, well,
because all I did was fight with editors, and these were public fights. I think everybody in Chicago kind of knew, if you're a Sun-Times writer, you're supposed to be pro-White Sox and pretty much pro- Chicago teams, because it's the paper of the people. You know, the Tribune was the quote-unquote Republican North Shore paper, and the Sun-Times was the paper of the working class, whatever all of that meant. I think it's pretty clear I wasn't on the same page as
And the reason I bring that up is because I want to bring up the name Armando Salguero with the Miami Herald, who I don't know if you're aware of this, but he tweeted some things.
Well, I heard this story.
Yeah. And I think we're in unprecedented journalism times as far as newspapers are concerned. His editor and publisher came out and lambasted Armando Salguero and basically said Armando Salguero he's full of shit. Don't listen to him. And this is the way we really feel. I mean, I can't try to place myself in the shoes of Armando Salguero or any sports columnist at a major daily in this country. And to have your own paper, you know, admonish you so seriously like that. I mean, I'm sticking about you. If this had happened with you in the Chicago Sun-Times, you would have lost your mind.
And this was over a sensitive issue in 2020. Me, it was over, you know, rooting for the White Sox or not. Something silly like that. Now, update here to 2020, and yes, what you're saying, we've talked about how soft sports columnists are across the board. It's because they're trying to hold on for dear life. They are literally trying to protect their salaries. And the guy in Miami, it wasn't just him. I think Greg Cody of the staff, same staff, said he was also, apparently he responded to this, and they also censored him. So it wasn't just Armando, it was Cody. So now you have this rebellion in the Miami Herald sports staff, and as it is, that newspaper barely hanging on. The only reason I think it's still alive is they did excellent reporting on Jeffrey Epstein. They broke the Epstein stuff that started that drama that ended with his suicide, or allegedly in prison. It started in the Miami Herald, once a great newspaper, now a shell of its former self, but they did break the Epstein stuff. You do not need that at your newspapers. And newspapers are crumbling as it is. They need to be unified more than ever, and you certainly don't need this nonsense. I guarantee you, by the end of the calendar year, both of those guys are without jobs, and here's something else to consider. They are both longtime members of that staff. That means they make more money than everybody else in the staff, and that makes it more convenient to use something like this to get rid of them.
You know, it's amazing when you think about it and how it's changed so drastically as far as newspapers and the industry of newspapers, Jay, and you've talked about this for a long time, and so many have been shuttered, gone out of business. Two newspaper towns have become one newspaper towns, and even in the one newspaper town, such as Miami, you know, the Herald is hanging on for dear life, and we've seen the Rocky Mountain News, of which you used to write for, it's been long gone. And my point is that never did I think we'd reach the day where some of these alternative newspapers in these towns, you worked in Denver, the Westword was going on then, they're still going on now. In Miami, the Miami New Times, I'm sure they've got an alternative newspaper in every city in this country, every major city, and these newspapers actually stand a better chance to sustain operations than the major daily newspapers in America.
Yeah, because they're not paying their people much, and their advertising rates aren't as high. It all comes down to, you know, to advertising, because everybody in media, most media, are in desperation mode. You're holding on to your advertisers in a pandemic more than ever, and a lot of these advertisers have dried up. They have their own business problems, so they're not spending. So the revenues coming into these newspapers are really at all-time lows. It's amazing a lot of these newspapers even exist anymore, and that's why the Herald, I guarantee you, the publisher made that decision, the company. And a lot of these places are run by hedge fund creeps, okay? That's what's happened. And rather than deal with that, the hedge fund will just say, get rid of these guys. They're making $110,000 a year. Get rid of them. That's what's going on here. Do you know, it doesn't really have as much to do with censoring these two guys as much as it is probably the amount of money they're making, and that the people who have purchased, these hedge fund people purchasing these chains, these newspaper chains, they just don't want any headaches. They would prefer to run everybody off and have robots write the stories.
Oh, yeah.
I better be careful what I wish for, because probably within the next decade, you will be seeing that. Robots fed the information, writing the stories with no opinion whatsoever in these operations.
24 to the hour, hour two of the show. Every hour two on a Wednesday night, it's a Mariotti Wednesday. It's Jay's thoughts, his views, his opinions, his commentary. You got an email for Jay, ryanradioshow@gmail.com. Vince Scully has joined, he's 92 years old. He's joined social media?
Vin Scully, for whatever reason, and he said he wanted to connect with the fans, decides to join Facebook and Twitter. Today was his first day. And I'll tell you what, Dino. Even the most beloved people in this business have a detractor or two. In my lifetime, I have yet to hear one detractor of Vin Scully. And I love the idea of him joining social media, because it's very possible he will break new ground here as the only guy in the history of social media to never have one negative notification on his Twitter feed. So I hope these Twitter creeps don't take advantage of this and turn on this guy. I hope Jack Dorsey is monitoring this, because it's good for social media, for Twitter, to actually have 92-year-old Vin Scully sending a message to his age group, his demographic. It's okay to plunge into social media. I love this. I don't know if he's going to keep up. I don't know if he has his own guy doing it. But knowing Scully, he is, if nothing else, he's telling somebody, hey, do this, and then somebody's typing in his words. I think it's wonderful. I think it's an awesome story.
Well, I guess it's better late than never for Vin at 92. I guess it's, you know, the last couple of things on his bucket list he wants to get to. What is your old friend Michael Jordan up to these days?
Oh, did you see this today?
I did.
he does a deal with DraftKings.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's going to be an advisor for DraftKings. Michael could have plunged his money into any company on earth. His net worth is about $2 billion, so I don't really know why he has to do that. With his gambling problems in the background, why would you ever want to draw attention to that? Wouldn't you be wanting to put a lid on that after that docuseries pretty much poo-pooed it? They got his view on it. They spent about 5 minutes on gambling, and that was it. Well, Jordan just opens that door right up again for criticism by becoming an advisor to DraftKings, a sports gambling and fantasy company. Why? And why would the NBA let him do it? Your answer, Dino. The NBA cannot wait, especially with its forthcoming financial issues, to plunge into legal gambling in America. Adam Silver wants to put betting windows in the arenas. Okay, could you have somebody other than Michael Jordan represent your interests? Just a bad look, a bad idea all the way around. Don't know what he's thinking. Maybe that's Michael's way of just thumbing his nose at people. But you and I talked at length during The Last Dance about his gambling issues. I don't need to do that again. They were real. He's writing large checks to bail bondsmen who end up dead and to cocaine dealers who gamble. This was a real legitimate issue back in the early 90s. And he successfully managed to PR that thing away during The Last Dance. And now he brings it right back. I don't know why the NBA didn't get a hold of him and say, Michael, don't do this. But I don't know.
Hey, Jay,
I can't explain it, but bad idea all the way around. Bad look.
I agree. Are they? I don't know this. You tell me. They're playing high school football in many states across the country right now. Are they playing high school football out in your area, out there in California?
No.
No.
But I saw a game in Utah the other day, where ESPN televised the game on a Friday night.
I saw that, yeah.
And nobody's really wearing masks in Utah. And again, we're getting at the great divide in America. We're going to see it across the board in football. In Utah, no masks. I saw a game on Saturday night they in Montgomery, Alabama, a college game. And kind of some people wearing masks, some not. Out here, Dino, everybody wears a mask. And the new Rams Chargers Stadium, which is an absolute masterpiece, is not going to have a single fan in there for the Rams or the Chargers. So the great American mask divide will be, I think, symbolized in football this season.
So I'd imagine that they've run the course of this year's Hard Knocks with the Chargers and the Rams. According to the ratings, you're one of the very few people who have been watching this thing. But have they concluded that, and what did you think of it?
No, not concluded yet, but they had an episode last night about Jacob Blake. But more than that, they have the teams gathered at the new stadium. I went to go see it the other day. It is stunning.
Really?
You will be blown away how large the stadium is. It takes up seemingly half a major block in Inglewood, California. It never ends. It just goes on and on and on because the way they have built this thing, the stadium, which is sunken into the ground, is only part of it. The roof extends beyond the actual playing field. It keeps going on and on because they've got parks in there. They've got a 6,000-seat amphitheater. I have never seen a sports facility this large, and I've been to soccer stadiums in Barcelona, and I've been to Jerry Jones World. I've seen them all. Nothing, Dino, is like this, and not one fan will be in there starting in a week and a half.
Well, same thing.
You don't think Stan Kroenke, who pumped $6 billion of his own money into that, is dying right now? They've had to cancel every concert in the place this year, and now they can't bring in fans, and he just pumped $6 billion into it, and the Chargers are giving him just a couple of pennies for it. What? Unbelievable. The Kroenke coming from Walmart money. You know him from Denver, owner of the Nuggets, has to deal with this out here.
Well, the same thing in Las Vegas, right? They've got that it looks like a Death Star in the middle of the desert. It's magnificent, the Raiders' new stadium, and they're not going to have anyone out there either. So,
Mark Davis, to his credit, said,
Son of Al.
Yeah, son of Al said, hey, look, we're not going to even let any fans in here because I'm not going to tell these 10,000 people in a new city that you can come and the rest of you can't. That's good PR on his part because he knows that he owes the state of Nevada until his dying day. They bailed his ass out in the Bay Area. Nothing was going to happen for him in Oakland. He knew it. And next thing you know, sweetheart deal from Adelson and the state of Nevada. And of course he made the right move. They've waited forever for NFL football in that city. They can wait another year.
All right, I want to try to play this. I don't know if we can. Let's see if we can. Here's Paul George. Hang on 1 second, Jay. Stay with me. Here's Paul George.
It was just a little bit of everything. I underestimated mental health, honestly. I had anxiety, a little bit of depression. Just being locked in here and, I just wasn't there. I checked out. And it was, games 2, 3, 4. I wasn't there. I felt like I wasn't there. Shout out to the people that was in my corner, the people that gave me the words. Shout out Laura. They helped big time. They helped keep me right. Be back in great spirits.
Yeah.
Can't thank them enough.
All right, so there's Paul George of the Los Angeles Clippers, and inside the bubble, and he's dealing with all kinds of mental health issues, and I guess Charles Barkley didn't take too kindly to that, and basically told Paul George to suck it up and shut up.
If Paul George is telling the truth about depression, I'm talking about clinical depression,
yeah,
then Barkley shouldn't be poking fun at him.
Right.
We've seen Kevin Love, DeMar DeRozan, Michael Phelps. I could run through the list.
Sure.
Talk seriously about depression. He talked about Dino being in a dark place and that he was depressed. If that's the case, I think Barkley needs to pull back. Because if you just, is Barkley a you know, a doctor here.
He knows
tries
everything.
To be any number of
Barkley knows everything about everything.
Roles in his chair at TNT, but I don't think he's a doctor, and I think you avoid that. See, Chuck sometimes gets himself into trouble here. Like last year, the women of San Antonio are fat. All right. I'm shocked he gets away with that on TNT, owned by AT&T. Depression? Don't mess around, Charles. Maybe you've never been depressed. A lot of people have. So, again, you know, I don't know if George was just, you know, look, it's rough in the bubble. In that case, nobody has any sympathy for Paul George. But if he is truly depressed, then Barkley's going to lay off.
Have you spoken with Mama Mariotti lately? How's she doing?
Everybody's good. And I think your show is coming in loud and clear, I believe.
Well, that's good. In Pittsburgh, all right. We like that. We like that. Do you think that these changes that have been enacted, at least for this season in Major League Baseball, Jay, with the expanded playoffs, the universal designated hitter, starting a runner at second base in extra inning games, do you think these are going to be rules that are going to be implemented from this point going forward in Major League Baseball? And how do you feel about them?
No. I want to shorten the games, and by the way, the games are longer than ever. 3 hours, 8 minutes, and counting. Too many home runs, too many strikeouts, same old deal, not enough action. No, I want them to realistically shorten the games, and that's not by fiddling around with history. That's the one thing baseball is going for, tradition, statistics. You can't be fiddling around with this, and now you're altering eras, and I don't think that's right. I don't think you should be doing that. I want a pitch clock. I want them to stop dawdling. The whole idea of this pandemic baseball was to get them in and get them out. Well, they're not. And nobody's monitoring this, and Manfred's being Manfred, and he doesn't care because the commercials keep running on the games, and these networks get some of their money back. It's hideous what's going on. No, I don't think you should bastardize the game with seven inning doubleheaders, nor do I think you should be starting runners at second base. I think you should have a 20-second pitch clock and get everybody's ass moving, the batter, the pitcher, and if not, strike one, strike two, strike three, or ball one, ball two, ball three, ball four.
Speaking of balls and strikes, I mean, you use the word bastardize. I'm completely and totally against it. The future of potentially robot umpires calling balls and strikes, what are your thoughts on that?
Anything to quicken the game, I don't think that would necessarily do it, but what, is the manager going to come out and argue with the ump? Ump, you don't have to worry about social distancing.
Right.
You can just argue with the robot ump and not worry about saliva coming back from the robot ump. I don't know. Baseball has so many issues, Dino. This is way down the list. They're just trying to get through COVID and saliva coming back from the robot ump. I don't know. Baseball has so many issues, Dino. This is way down the list. They're just trying to get through COVID. And how are they going to get through a postseason? They're not. You've already got both sides ready for war in the wintertime. No free agent is going to get an offer. You're going to have some sort of season next year, I assume. After that, all bets are off. Mike Trout's having a lousy year. That's the one thing you could depend on. At least we have Fernando Tatis Jr. But, Dino, when the biggest story of the baseball season is the Padres making deals, you've got major issues as an industry. No, you know, the ratings may be up, but the core sports fan isn't watching. And right now, Dino, we have entered September. Nobody has died yet, okay? We have entered September, and here we are, the smorgasbord of sports. We have the NBA playoffs. We have the NHL playoffs. We have the U.S. Open tennis. We're about to have the U.S. Open golf. The Masters is coming up. The Kentucky Derby on Saturday. We've got the NFL season starting next Thursday. We have college football starting. Here we are, ready or not. They're not ready, but they're going to plunge forward anyway. This is a perfect chance for sports to sell what it does best. Not politics, not boycotts, sports.
Yeah.
I just saw a great game, Bucks Heat. Heat are up 2-0. Great sports story. Bucks are the team that started the boycotting last week. Did they boycott prematurely? Did it knock them off their equilibrium? Great pandemic sports story. Miami Heat rising out of nowhere. Pat Riley, Jimmy Butler. See, this is what sports does best. We got away from it for months, and now I look at it as I'm the guy they're trying to convince. Guy like Dino Costa, guy like me, a lot of you out there, you want your sports back. You want to be tantalized by sports stories. The NBA is still doing it. Maybe not that many people are watching, but they're doing it. Next week, Tom Brady is a Buccaneer. Cam Newton and Bill Belichick. Belichick trying to prove it's still about a system. Or was it about Tom Brady? There are great storylines throughout the NFL. Baseball, I don't see any storylines. But at least I do in those two sports. And Dino, this is what sports can do. Yeah, we had a great golfing champion a few weeks ago. Now you have a U.S. Open coming up. Is he going to repeat? Is Tiger Woods finished? Is Phil Mickelson finished? Those are great stories. That's what sports can do now. They emerge from the worst of the pandemic, I assume, and still have their seasons intact. So now let's focus on sports and not politics, and maybe it could be fun in the next few months. Because these 2 months, 10 weeks, sports has never seen anything like the compacted content you're about to get.
Now you're talking, JJ. All right, now you're talking. And it's a great point. I hope you're right about this, too, because they have a wonderful opportunity right now to take center stage like perhaps at no other time in their past. With a lack of original programming, people looking for something to get their minds off of the chaos and the insanity, and instead of delivering them the pure games, the pure sports, it's gone into all of the things that dovetail and coincide with all of the nuttiness and the insanity that is around us. They are missing, I really applaud you for what you just said, they are missing a tremendous opportunity to fill a void during a time where sports can be more instrumental in psychologically helping people than perhaps at any time in the game's histories.
Yeah, and pulling us away from these political discussions that I'm not going to be able to deal with the next 2 months. I really am going to have a hard time following this election, and sports can change the conversation. There's nothing like a great game, and we've seen a lot of these NBA guys go off, I mean, Donovan Mitchell, Jamal Murray, I mean, these guys are coming out of nowhere and having these phenomenal games. I have been watching the NBA because I like the games. I'm watching a game 7 as we speak. Houston, Oklahoma City, and there's warfare there because James Harden and Chris Paul shipped away last offseason. So you've got an angle. This is what we normally talk about,
right,
you and I, when we're doing these shows.
Right,
and
right.
Now it's kind of back. And while, I don't know, I still think there could be COVID outbreaks, and who knows what's going to happen politically in this country, the athletes have had their chance to boycott in the NBA. Finish the season out. This could be a fascinating end of the playoffs for the NBA. As I said earlier, I don't know if the NFL can hold its end of the bargain. There are many angry players waiting to see what Jones and Goodell do. Let's see what happens next week. But I'm talking about basketball and even hockey. Hockey's been a little boring. But that said, they're both going to apparently finish their seasons. That is some sort of miraculous feat when we think about where we were back in March and April.
I'm surprised, Jay. I really am. And I'm not watching. You are, and it hurts me because I love basketball the way that you do. But you tell me the games are competitive. I did notice, in the headlines that Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell is just an exceptional. Both of them are just exceptional talents. They went off in that game 6 and just great players. But are they? I'm surprised that there have not been any virus related things going on in the NBA, despite the fact that they've taken as many precautions as possible. But I'm surprised nonetheless. And number two, I want to ask you: Are they doing what baseball is doing? Are they pumping crowd noise into the arena?
Yeah,
are they?
They're pumping crowd noise, defense chants. You've got these big headed fans that are virtual fans. They are literally the people of. Signed in to be one of them. I'm looking at them right now. They got big heads, and this is realistic, and they're rooting for their teams. They've got them split between Houston fans and Oklahoma City fans. But back to your original point, stay tuned on that, too, because starting this week, family members, significant others, kids were allowed into the bubble. If there are going to be COVID issues, it's going to happen now. You still have until October the 13th, okay? We still have 6 weeks left in the bubble. And now the families are there, and this is where there could be problems. The NBA today, you know, sending out a statement to the players, corral your fans at courtside. Owners, general managers, shut up, don't yell at the refs. Why? Because everybody can hear it. We can hear it. And there's Steve Ballmer screaming like a banshee, and who knows what he said. Well, now we can pick it up.
Yeah.
And you talked about live mics earlier. Goodness knows what the hell they might say in the heat of the moment. Pat Riley in the heat of the moment. So they put out a memo today about this. Yes, the NBA is very concerned about family members leaving the bubble or not quarantining properly before they enter the bubble. If the NBA is going to have a problem, it's going to happen in the next few weeks.
Let me leave you with this. There's been talk about it. I've seen some stories that have been written about it, and baseball, I guess, is considering it. You know, it's been a horrible year. You know, you don't even know the players on the rosters. This guy's gone one day, another guy replaces him. You got this guy who's got COVID. This guy now replaces. I mean, it's crazy. Aroldis Chapman threw a ball last night at about 100. Did you say if that had hit that guy, Jay, he would have been dead. But I want to say this. So it's been talked about, but I haven't seen any evidence of the fact that baseball is actually formulating plans. I think they might want to do this. You know, putting the postseason, when they get to that point, in, you know, a closed environment. Otherwise, you know, I mean, they might finish the season in January.
Well, they're talking about a bubble. Then why hasn't Manfred told us about what he's doing? This
he
man
hasn't.
Does no press conferences. Wouldn't you think in the middle of a pandemic when public trust is down, you're trying to keep viewers interested, that you would have regular media conferences? No! This guy will pick up the phone and call Tyler Kepner at the Times or Bill Shiken at the LA Times or something like that. But no, he doesn't want questions. He wants soft media coverage. Yeah, if I'm a baseball fan, I want to know, are you going into a bubble during these expanded playoffs or not? They've talked about out here, Dodger Stadium, Angel Stadium, San Diego. They've also talked about Texas, which I believe is also a COVID state. I have no faith in Rob Manfred. If I wanted Rob Manfred to tie his shoes, I wouldn't be convinced they would tie properly. I have zero faith that this guy can lead baseball out of the wilderness, much less get baseball through this season in a bubble. How many near brawls have we had in baseball? We're supposed to be following a protocol here. A brawl would be the ultimate sham of a protocol, and yet you have Chapman, some lunatic, with 101-mile-per-hour fastball, could have killed the guy.
Yeah.
Do they even have ambulances anywhere near these stadiums right now? You have no fans. There's an ambulance standing by if somebody gets hit in the head. That's what I mean. Some of these sports, quality control, attention to detail is important. Baseball, he hasn't even thought about these things. If that ball hits that guy in the head, and Aaron Boone doesn't respond properly, and Kevin Cash, the other manager, how many near brawls have we had? How come in hockey, Dino, we've had 11 fights? They're triple the amount they had this point of the playoffs last year in the NHL. All they're doing is fighting. I thought we were in a pandemic. I guess not.
It's good to be back together, Jay, after a week off. I can't thank you enough. We do it again next week. So until then, my friend, carry on.
Yeah, man. Have a good holiday week, and we'll see you next week.
Same to you. The great Jay Mariotti every Wednesday night on the show. Of course, last week with the one-week hiatus, and Jay wasn't on. Then again, nobody was on. I wasn't on. But our thanks to Jay for another great segment with us here tonight. Good stuff.